Okay, everybody, let's have an AA meeting. I'm Julie and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers meeting at the NAVA Club. Hello. Where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, desperately in need, we'll hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. One of the reasons I love this program is because you can say, oh, Kurt's telling a story tonight. And you're like, Kurt, what? Which Kurt? I found all these Kurts that I know. And then when he walks in, you're like, oh, Kurt. So with that, I give you Kurt.
Hey guys, I'm Kurt, alcoholic definitely. Thanks Julie, thanks Tim and the guys for asking me to come up here. A little nervous obviously, but we'll get through it. Just another bozo on the bus, right? So I guess what it was like, what I was like, what I'm like now, how I established my relationship with God to keep me sober. All right, here we go. So, sobriety date is August 15th of 16. I've got a home group, How It Works, 545 NABA. Got a sponsor that comes here to the NABA Club. In the process of working the steps, dragging a little bit on 9. It's taking a little longer than I thought, but it's okay. I'm blessed to be here today and to feel a part of the program because there are a lot of years that I didn't know. It just was lost, you know. I was the slave to alcohol and the other shit that I was, pardon me, the other stuff I was doing. And grew up in Stone Mountain. Stone Mountain boy, went to Rock Ridge Elementary School. There's Emily. Hey, Emily. Good family, good upbringing. Youngest of three kids. I've got an older brother, older sister. Parents were married for 40 some odd years, and good childhood. Nothing to really drink over. Just again, a real active in sports, big swimmer, soccer, tennis, you name it. Had everything that good loving parents would provide, and no worries. Had a good childhood growing up, and let's see, first drink, Cella Lambrusco. Yeah, that green bottle. I remember I was about 6. I had an older brother, older sister that kept the bottle in the back of the fridge, had a little rubber band around it, you know. And the sister would come in and grab the bottle, pass it down to my brother, and then down to me. And I just remember it tasting good and I wouldn't say relief, but it was a treat when the sister would come in and grab that sucker. And she was 5 years older, Carrie. Let me back up. I'm going to flake out a little bit on you and be a little all over with this, but I am predisposed. I've got a bunch of folks in my family on my dad's side that are alcoholics, or I consider them being alcoholic. And an aunt that's still alive that's in her throes. Lost a grandmother because of it. The cool thing out of all of it, I didn't realize my dad passed probably about 10 years ago when I first got sober in 04. He passed in January of 05. And with all that, I found out that I had a nephew that was in sobriety that had like 15, 20 years at the time. So I thought that was kind of cool. So it's definitely in the family. It's in the genes. And with that being said, I'm pretty tight with brothers, sisters, and family. Brother in Charlotte, sister in Warner Robins. My drinking and the other stuff that I used to do really took off once I hit high school. I can remember that feeling of having to have it. You know, like I wasn't normal if I didn't have some, what the heck was I drinking? Like wine coolers or something in eighth, ninth grade on the weekends, you know, before the football games. And at 16, first, with singleness of purpose, I get a little confused how this always works with people telling their story and other substances. Put it this way, I had a lot of other substances. And so 16, I got did some of that other stuff and really liked it and took off with that from 16 until 26, every day, all day. You know, would want to get baked every morning that I woke up, and drinking was always there, but in a way I'm kind of grateful that I started to dabble in that other stuff, because it really the consequences got really ugly, or else you know, if I didn't have that other stuff, I might still be out there trying to manage and use, to be honest with you. First consequence from drinking was in, I was a junior in high school, had a little party, got a disorderly conduct ticket out in Stone Mountain, knew the judge and all that. It was a little slap on the wrist. I thought it was cool because I had a party and everybody had a good time. And so that was the first little consequence. Ended up having the first DUI was probably 19 or 20. I was working for DeKalb County Parks and Rec, little lifeguard guy, teaching, again, big swimmer, loved to coach swim team and lessons, taught a lot of different types of lessons to all ages. And so I got a DUI out there, little slap on the wrist. From high school to college, it definitely progressed. I mentioned that, you know, I felt like I had to have it. Just didn't feel normal. I mean, I was a pretty good kid, got a pretty good head on my shoulders, but it just something wasn't right if I couldn't, you know, if I couldn't get that drink in me or that other stuff I was doing. And so consequences got worse. Trying to think when the first time I actually got locked up would be that DUI, and then 92, 93, probably another DUI. Still, I went up to University of Georgia and was up there for a good 6-7 years. Had a good time with that. I would come home in the summers and work at the pool, manage the pool and coach the swim team type stuff. And I loved it. You know, I was able to drink and use like I wanted to, and save a little money here or there, student loans that I'm still paying off. But, you know, I that's part of my story, is the ism, I guess, how it manifests itself in other ways. I mean, even when I was quote unquote sober before, I could spend money. You know, I could try and fill that void, which I definitely did. Drawing a blank. So I'm in college. I'm spending money. I'm making money. I'm using like a fiend. You know, it wouldn't be uncommon to drive all the way home on a middle of the night on a Friday or Saturday just to re-up and drive all the way back to Athens. I mean, the lengths that I would go to stay numb were just mind-boggling. And it you know, to this day, I'm still like, good Lord, you know, what was I thinking? So University of Georgia, I didn't actually end up finishing up. Associate's degree, had enough credits for a bachelor's degree, just kept, you know, transferring and college of this to this, and had a good time. And bumped into a guy that I'm actually went back to work for now, American Pools. And so I was home one summer, met Wendy Wallace. She's like working for, yeah, there's a name from the past, right? And went to work with these guys, and really liked it, liked the gig, and had some more consequences. I was able to put it down, the alcohol and the weed and the stuff I was doing. And at the time, I think I really plugged in the work aspect of everything. You know, I kind of obsessed on that. You know, I think I had to end up getting that second DUI, which I ended up having to do a little time at the work release up in fine Gwinnett County, 2 weeks, you know, and all I did was work like a fiend. I didn't do anything else. Stayed straight. Still kind of crazy as hell in my head, but so after I get out of work release, then it's on. Then I can drink and party like I wanted to. And let's see, in 2000, I think, was my first episode with like a 30-day treatment. I tried to get the folks off my back. I had had some more consequences. Moved back home, being a 30-year-old man. Moved back home, being a good drinker like I was, and mooched off them for about a year. Went through a 30-day treatment down at GRN down there, and I remember just being full of it, just thinking, and I thought this for a lot of years, that it was all circumstance. You know, I was a pretty good guy. I was a hard worker, and I just needed to, just needed to get the job, the girl, the place. You know, it was all circumstance, and that I never really knew that, as sick as I was. And so I got out of GRN, got messed up the day I got out, you know. Kept you know, trying to juggle jobs and manage and manipulate and use like I wanted to. And then got exposed to a program down the road that's now called Focus. It was Shiloh Christian Home, and wandered into the turnaround meeting on a Saturday over there. I actually didn't wander in. I got dropped off by the folks. You know, here, you're you need to go to this meeting. So got dropped off over there, and something kind of clicked where I got a little bit of a picture of how jacked up I was. You know, 30, living at home, every penny that I made at work would go to support my habit. And so I ended up checking in over there about 30 days later. It's right over here by St. Pius High School. And for about 3 years, my little MO would be, again, I knew I partied too much, but I always thought it was a lot of circumstance. I wasn't that bad a guy. I came to Napa for the first time, and I wasn't as bad as y'all, you know. I just to be honest, you know how some of us can do in the back of our head, where I was just like, okay, well, yeah, I got a problem, but once the stars align, I get the job, the car, this, that, I'll be all right. I'll be able to manage. And It took a good 3 years to finally get desperate. And in 04, June 24 of 04, I finally came in and I realized that that it was my thinking that kept fouling me up. I mean, I had that healthy fear of where my mind would take me. You know, even with good intentions, even with trying to be a good person, even, you know, go mow the lawn for the folks, go do this, go do that. And I couldn't get it. I didn't realize that I was sick, you know. And so in 04, I checked in over there one more time. They gave me another chance. And I really dummied up. I met Lisa and Todd S. and a bunch of guys over at the CA program, and got involved. And, I was desperate. I was willing to take direction. I wasn't perfect, but at the same time, I was blessed to be, you know, I wasn't in jail. You know, somebody actually would give me a bed and feed me and help me get started, because, you know, I think at the point my folks were at, were like, bless their hearts, they tried to help, but they finally were like, dude, you can't, you know, don't come around anymore, we're going to call the police type stuff, right? My dad used to joke with me about the $1,000 lawnmower, because I'd get a hold of the lawnmower and take it to the pawn shop type stuff. I mean, I got pretty low bottom there for a minute, you know, wanting to do whatever I could to feed my addiction. And so when I was over there at Focus, again, I did a lot of CA. Met some guys, started working some steps. I was going to a meeting or two every day, and nothing special. I mean, just an average, ordinary drunk. And but I took some actions, and life got better. And trying to think as far as the steps, I in the 3 or 4 years that I kind of bounced in and out, I would get, you know, I come to a meeting, I get my sheets on, I get a sponsor, I call them, but I never really take advice. One of those situations was I got opportunity part ownership in a little pool company, and things were good, and I had 90 days living at the halfway house. And you know, everybody I went to, the sponsor, the guys that I was talking to in CA in the program, and I'd be like, I'd already have my mind made up, you know. I'd be, well, what do you think? You know, it's a good opportunity to do this. And had the opportunity to move to the grandpa's place out in Stone Mountain, because he was going to the nursing home. So, of course, you know, that's God working in my life, right? So and it took maybe 2 weeks till I picked up, driving home from a meeting, thinking, okay, well, as long as I'm not smoking the crap I was smoking, you know, half bottle of tequila, no big deal, right? I'm not a real alcoholic. I don't wake up with the shakes, or I'm just that other stuff is what got me. And that was one of my little instances over there at Focus, and just showing up and not doing anything in the program of AA, you know. And so when in 04, when I got over here, I got busy, got the sponsor. One of the examples that really, this guy was knee deep in service, maybe a little overboard, but at the time I thought that, but hell, it was working, you know, he had something I wanted. And so started doing a lot of meetings, started chairing some meetings, started making coffee, doing whatever I could to try and fit in. And you know, it took a long time to feel. It still take a long time this time. I mean, I'll be back, God willing, hopefully 2 years next month. And I'm just now hitting that point where I feel like I'm a little more comfortable. I can look in the eye. But I got that once I got out of myself and started doing some work over there with Todd and the gang. Trying to think, I had these grand schemes as far as work and living arrangements. I ended up staying over there at Focus in 04 the first time for 11 months, and had a spot picked out, and you know, I had a pretty decent little job, making a little money. I got a little truck back, you know, feeling a little bit better. The desperation had worn off, wore off, but you know how we can forget how bad it got. And so 11 months, I was like, okay, I'm ready to move out. I've got this, you know, no big deal. I had an apartment picked out. My sponsor at the time was like, nah, yeah, I don't know what you're thinking. So Harry B. had residence then at that time. And he's like, go over to see this guy, you know, you could do month to month. And it was the best thing I did, you know, had done it for my sobriety at that time. You know, I was, want to say I just finished up a fourth, fifth step. I was a little slow going. I mean, I had, you know, 11 months at the time, and went over to Harry's, and ended up staying over there for like three and a half years, you know, over there on Dresden by the Boys and Girls Club. And it was very cool. Was working the steps. There was an instance doing the four step when I was that was my first four step ever. You know, I'd come in here and say, okay, I'll go to a meeting, I'll do clean up a little bit, do whatever, but I would never, you know, I do the 1, 2, 3 and then back out, you know. Everything else became more important. So in 04 was the first time I worked a four step. The cool thing about it was is that for me the second step really took off, because when I had a lot of resentment against God, you know, a lot of, I'm such a bad person, I'm not going to get it, why would God let me do this to myself, type, you know, all that crazy shit in our head. And and Todd said something that still rings in my head today. It was, you know, I don't know about you, but my God loves me. It's like, it was at the time it was pretty profound, you know. It was like, wow, okay, cool. And looking back on it, that was definitely the second step for me, was you know, maybe God's not out to get me. Maybe, you know, I could do this thing, and He wants me to live a good life and be sober and da 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 da. I got a couple little stories I want to back up on one of these. When I was over in Focus, it's kind of funny because I had about 6 months, was over there. I was working at the Marriott right here, Century Center, and waiting tables or something in the morning. And a buddy of mine, Christian Gibson, called from Alabama. I hadn't talked to him forever. And he gave me a motorcycle, right? So I'm like, all right, sweet. Went and rented a truck, went and picked up this little motorcycle, got it running. So I would tool down there to the Marriott in this little motorcycle. Well, at the same time, I wasn't exactly being new. I was still, even though I was desperate and trying to live the principles as best I could, I was actually skimming money. I'm a little kleptomaniac. It took a minute. It still can be challenging today to really do the right thing and be honest. And so I was skimming money from the Marriott at lunch, off the lunch thing, thinking, oh, they're paying me $2 an hour. What's a couple extra bucks here or there? No big deal, right? So I'm sitting in a meeting, and I hear this, and it's eating my lunch, right? I do it for about 2 weeks, not a whole lot of money, but I know it's wrong. I'm too embarrassed to tell my sponsor. Like, damn, you're crazy as hell. And but I got blessed with this motorcycle, right? So I hear somebody in a meeting one day tell, say the phrase, they had to quit telling God what his job was. And to me, that was like, wow, okay. Because I've been praying, you know, God, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to steal this money. I know it's not right. I'm going to end up, you know, doing the other stuff I was doing. And so that was the first honest prayer that I really remember was, okay, God, show me a sign, you know. And the funny thing is, the next day I show up to work, and I think the motorcycle broke down or something, so I had to leave it at night and then walk up there the next morning, and the thing's gone. Oof, you know. So it was just definitely a way that God showed me that that He, you know, He's answering my prayer. He's show you a sign. He showed me a sign. So I got a kick out of that. I can remember early on when my sponsor would. I just never realized how wrapped up in not only in self, but how I needed a vent, I guess is what I felt, being new, you know, and I still have that capacity, but I remember at the time this guy just saying breathe all the time. I would call on the phone, but just, you wouldn't believe this, going, like we can, detoxing like a mother, not realizing it, and him just breathe, you know, it's all good, just, you know, you'll be all right. Did you use today? No. You're still over there at the halfway house, you show up for work, yep, so... I get a kick out of that today. One of the other little sayings that I say in my head when I'm, you know, when I can get up in my head is how really important is it, you know? And that, and they're only swimming pools, because I get wrapped up in work type stuff, you know. They're only swimming pools. They're still going to be there, you know. There's water in it. It's blue. It's let's see. So 04-05, I start plugging a little bit more. The CE group that I was a member of, we started taking it. We're doing a meeting down at Salvation Army. I started running down there on Saturday nights, doing a little book study. Very cool. It was about 50 guys, and most of them had that same MO as I did. You know, they might need a little help. They might need a hand up, but they're not that bad. You know, you want me to go to a meeting every day? You want me to call a sponsor? You want me to pray? You want me to do all this stuff? Well, yeah, okay. But I got this. You know, I'm not that bad. And I got to see a lot of that going down there on Saturday nights. And I ran with it for about, you know, 3 years. And it was very cool every Saturday night. And very freeing. Made some pretty good friends that I keep bumping into every once in a while. And I'm going to back up a little bit here to 0405 and a guy named Mike S. that was in the CA program. So I had a year and a half, had worked through the steps, things were pretty good, but I was feeling a little stale, right? Started dabbling in some other programs, Celebrate Recovery type stuff, and just looking for, you know, just feeling stale, I don't know. And I was sponsoring a couple guys that were down there at the Salvation Army, and I think that's right when Hurricane Katrina and Rita hit over there. Rita was the one who ended up going and doing blue tarp roofing over in Beaumont, Texas. So a year and a half, this guy, Mike S., got a group of, everybody was in recovery, about 20 guys, and literally everybody just quit their jobs and packed up their crap and went to Beaumont. And the cool thing out of all that was, not only was I able to stay sober, but I got to see that when you really work, you know, try and plug in, that God's not going to just leave me hanging out there. So went out there. It didn't work out. One of the guys that I went with that was sponsoring ended up relapsing. Nobody really made much money. I stayed behind because I felt like, well, I quit my job. What else am I going to do? You know, I didn't have anywhere to go. So, but the cool thing was there was another program that I used to have a huge, I don't say chip on my shoulder, but a stigma against, that they weren't as sober as AA and maybe CA. But and a lot of the guys at Focus did this 12-step fellowship, and I judgmental prick, you know, I was just, you know, so I go to Beaumont, and that happens to be the only clubhouse and the only meetings that are around is this other 12-step program, And I got plugged in from day one. You know, we show up to do Beaumont. There's 300 guys in a parking lot. It was really disorganized. Couldn't find any work. We finally started tarping some roofs, bought some gear to do the 12 pitch roofs. And we're, you know, blessed, and we were like one out of, you know, 50 or 100 crews literally that started getting some work down there. But I would just get up in the morning, do my little prayer meditation. Are we working today? No, if not, then I went around with these guys over at the little clubhouse right down the road. And it really opened my eyes to you know, who am I to judge somebody else's program? I mean, another 12-step program. If it works, it's, and if I, you know, open my heart and open my mind, and there's a part, and I hate when I paraphrase, you know, people paraphrase the big book, but that part in the big book where it talks about acceptance, and it talks about if I go into a meeting that I'm going to hear something that's going to help me in my recovery, I hear it. If I go in with being judgmental and focusing it on the negative, then that's, you know, that's what I get out of it. And I say that to say that this clubhouse over there helped me stay sober. And I wish I remember this old timer's name, but I'm over there with a year and a half. I'm so sober. At this clubhouse, and there's this little old timer that was celebrating a birthday, telling a story. I don't know what made him do it. He just saw the look on my face, all puffed up and everything. It's like, and this guy's got the biggest ego in the room. And, of course, I had to laugh. I'm like, got a little resentment for a minute, but I see what he was talking about now, you know, that again, who am I to judge? I mean, I know what worked for me was getting in the book, doing the steps, trying to practice the principles of my life, get my ass to a meeting. I need to do a better job of talking to my sponsor. But for the most part, you know, this guy was right on, because I was pretty judgmental at that time, and I still can be if I get too far off the beam. So I was doing came back from Beaumont, stayed sober, and it got a little hairy there for a minute. I didn't want to use, but I was actually not in a good position, you know, in a. The FEMA stuff fell through, so we were doing contracting, and it was on a crew with guys that were using. They were using on the job, but at night, I know, because, you know, some of my little clothes, my little tools and stuff came up missing, you know. And no resentment, no nothing. I mean, I made it back home. Mike put me to work doing carpentry helper, paying me pretty good, and plugged back into the program here at NABA and in AA, and started doing pool work on the side. Didn't have a four-year degree, but I'd always been a pretty good worker. I'd never really, I've always been blessed and been able to find work, right? And so I came back, started working for Mike, and then sometime, this must have been 06, 07, I went and got a little business license and started being the pool boy, you know, cleaning pools, residential, and it took off. And I was blessed, you know. I met my ex wife Anna. Some of y'all know Anna, and she's doing all right. She's in Tallahassee, and so life really blossomed when I got sober that first time in 04. It, you know, I was free, and somewhere around 5 years. I mean, I had kind of worked my way out. I quit doing the book study down there at the Salvation Army. Wasn't sponsoring as many guys. I had the same sponsor, but I would never really call him and ask him, you know, when I first got sober, what do you want to do? What, you know, just every minute of every day, if I had a decision, I'd call him and run it by him. Kind of like, I like the term sounding board, because he was my sounding board to God. You know, I know this guy, especially, he's human, but that's how he helped me to plug in and to seek out God's will. And somewhere around 5 years, I started cutting corners again, and I paid dearly for it. I think I quit growing spiritually. It became okay to, what were we doing? Not paying taxes on the business that just flourished, right? And then I started gambling a little bit, and but figured, because I was paying the bills and we lived comfortable, it was no big deal. We'll catch up on that, you know. And Yeah, we're still making amends for that stuff, that's for sure. But that's a blessing though, because you know, I could be one of those guys that gets locked up in the pen. You know, I do have a couple this last time, especially I've got a couple run-ins with the law. But thank God that, I mean, I should be one of those guys that should be down what Jackson or whatever they call these state prisons. I literally should have done multiple years, and I'll tell you what how God looked out for me this last time. But where am I at here? I was started cutting corners 5 years. It took 2 years to finally go out and pick up again, but I turned in, what did Annie used to call me? I was the nice guy with the asshole streak, and then I turned into the asshole with the nice guy streak, right? Just irritable, restless, discontent, ugly, and that's not who I wanted to be, you know, and I couldn't see how, by letting off, you know, resting on my laurels on how that, you know, it's amazing how the brain rationalizes and justifies how I can let that alcoholic thinking just take over if I'm not doing the right thing. And it did, man. It took 2 years. I fell out. How did I rationalize? Whippets. I fell out on whippets, believe it or not. I mean, I was gambling like a fiend because I was making money. So that was the main thing. I was definitely using that alcoholically. Wouldn't be uncommon to drop $200-$300 in these silly little gas station machines, you know. Today for me, I can't do any of that stuff. I mean, I can't. Yeah, I mean, to each his own. You know, if nobody's perfect, everybody's got their shit. But for me, I can't. I don't buy lottery tickets anymore. I don't, you know, I don't do any of that. And I paid dearly. It took me. It took me 2 years to fall out. Once I fell out, I pretty much abandoned the wife, went and hauled up in the dope hotel for what I thought was a week or two, and I'll get back in the program, and I couldn't do it. You know, 9 months later, tore, you know, was tearing it all down, got a little episode where I had a theft by deception in Gwinnett County for not reimbursing a work deal that I owed him money and didn't think anything of it, and sure enough, they threw, you know, a month in Rice Street will kind of wake you up a little bit. And but it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough. I fought for 4 years to get back here, and I think most of what I was dealing with was obviously ego, but I was trying to hold on to the pool company. You know, I had, as long as I had a little money, I'd be all right. And I'd go to a meeting, and I'll, you know, show up on Sundays and cut mom's lawn, and I'll try and call the ex or the wife or whatever the heck she was, you know, and give her a little money if I could, but just killing myself, you know, and it got ugly. It, again, 4 years, I come back for maybe a month or two to try and get Anna off my back and feel a little better and try and salvage what I could out of the business, and it didn't work. I mean, this last go around, in a strange way, I'm glad I had to chalk it all up, but I had to, you know, lose the business. I had to lose the wife. I had to lose the condo. I mean, everything. And my freedom. I ended up, I wasn't going to throw this out there. It is kind of an off-color, little distasteful joke. But if anybody is missing, like, a lawnmower or tools or equipment and lives in the area, come see me after the meeting, because that's what I was... That's what I was doing to support my habit, you know. I was stealing like a little fiend. I was a little klepto, and I got picked up for something, and ended up doing 8 months in DeKalb County Jail on a theft, burglary. I went into a commercial pool that the company I was working for managed, and stole some stuff, and it was definitely wrong, and paid for it dearly because I got stuck in there for 8 months. I don't know if I was. I don't have a resentment. I mean, I'm glad it happened in a way, but, you know, I think I got stuck in the system over there. And then I was on probation in Gwinnett, so I got to go up and do a month in Gwinnett. It got ugly. I had to chalk it all up. And something happened January 13th of 17, sitting in jail. There was a group of Fit Tradition guys that would come and do a meeting, which was awesome. So it was because there was definitely no resources in there to try and better yourself or to really see what was going on the outside. And so, yeah, something happened, and I don't want to say I was saved or what, but I knew that I couldn't keep doing the shit I was doing. And so when I got out, you know, thank God that the folks, Mom up in Houston and the brother and sister, and I was never one to hit them up for too much for money or this or that or beg them for a place to live. I just ended up going down to the Salvation Army because that's what I knew. I knew the guys down there, and they took me in. And it's actually, I mean, for being a shelter, it's actually can be a good program if anybody knows anybody that's struggling or doesn't have a place to go. I mean, they've got the emergency beds where they'll take you in for a week or 2 weeks. They've got a probation parole department. They've got an A&D program. So I went over there just in the instance that, okay, I need to get back on my feet, you know, of course, get a job, get my ass to a meeting, which I did the instant I got out of. Again, I was in DeKalb. I had to go to Gwinnett for probation. So when I got out of Gwinnett, that's the first thing I did is I got my ass to a meeting, got some numbers, asked for some help, called the folks, told them I'm out. And, of course, that was one of the funny things about being locked up was I didn't realize how much shit I had put the ex and the mother through. They're like, oh, thank God. They finally told me they could sleep after that, you know, knowing that I was not only in a safe place, but I wasn't going to come knocking on the door or busting in or anything, which I don't know that I ever really did that, but it got kind of ugly. You know, I wouldn't put it past myself if I would have kept being out there, you know. I probably would have done some even worse stuff than I did. And so when I got out, I got busy. God looked out for me the whole friggin' way. I mean, everything just, stuff just happened. It just aligned. It dummied up and realized that, okay, you know, I'm 47, 46, 47. I'm getting a second chance. You know, most people don't get that chance. And so when I was down there, it turned out I got mandated to do treatment because of the probation stuff and everything. So I ended up doing the little 90-day program down there. And I still was pushing the envelope a little bit, being kind of borderline manic, kind of OCD, you know, neat freak. And, I had to do this. I got to get sober again. I got to get the job. I got to – being in a hurry to you know, manage and manipulate. And but despite all that, God was looking out for me. I mean, the first day in treatment down there that I was able to get a pass and go to a meeting, I did it. Big deal. The first day I was able to go to work after 60 days, I got a job, I think waiting tables or something, and then I was like, something wasn't feeling right. I didn't want to be in that industry. And so I called this guy Jim I used to work for in 97 through 2001, and they took me back. They're like, sure, yeah, you want to work? And they knew my story. He knew that I had all that crap in the background, and he's like, no, I mean, you're obviously not getting a work credit card or a vehicle just yet, but yeah, we know the job you can do. And he gave me a shot, and I'm still working with them today. Got it, found a sponsor, started working some steps, but again, being in treatment, being down there on a limited capacity, being able to get out and about, it's kind of slow going at first. But Paul O, I don't know if y'all know Paul, he's my sponsor now, plugging away. I need to do a better job calling. We were meeting on Tuesdays, and so things were really, really happening, getting down there with, you know, the freedom for meetings, the freedom for work. And then when it was time to move out, I was able to move out because I already had a job. You know, I found a little boarding house downtown, $150 a week. Woohoo. You know, it doesn't seem like much, but when when I talked it all up and pissed it all away, you know, God's still looking out for me. So, I'm living downtown. I never thought I'd like living downtown. I love it. I mean, I'm over by, right across the street from Ansley Mall, Botanical Gardens. And, I was working out like a fiend, jogging every night, just feeling good. And it's funny that both Tims, appreciate y'all asking me to do this, because I've been kind of, work had been crazy for the last month. Let me back up, that I was doing a lot of prayer, a lot of meditation, 1-2 meetings a day, calling Paul, you know, really plugged in, knee deep in the program. And about 2 months ago, work kicked in, and I really had to, I went from 7 to 9 meetings a week down to 3 or 4, and I started to feel it. You know, I started to get irritable. I started getting in my head a little bit more. So it's cool how Tim asked me to do this. I hem-hawed around and bullshitted, like, let me ask the sponsor and all that weak stuff. And you know what? The fact of the matter is I've got to do a little bit more service. I got to plug in a little more. I've been going over to the Fifth Tradition on Saturdays. I love that meeting. I love their concept on service. Haven't joined yet, but you know, I know that I got to plug back in a little bit more and get a little more active. Not sponsoring any guys yet. Tuesday nights, I would love. I was going down to the men's ministry meeting at the Salvation Army again about a month ago, 6 weeks ago. Work, and I got to be careful letting the work thing dominate my life, because I realize that the recovery thing is everything in my life that's got to come first. That and obviously God. So trying to think if there's any other little stories or anything. I don't know, man. I'm blessed to be back. I'm blessed to feel a part of. Let's see, I have any questions. I guess I've got enough time. If anybody has, I'm open to suggestions. If anybody's got a new meeting or a new outlet for service, I'm to that point now where I'm comfortable, but I know I need to be reaching out and continuing to grow spiritually, because that's what, that's what got my ass before. I got comfortable, I got complacent, work was good, relationships were good, and I started working my myself back out. So anyway, I appreciate y'all's patience and attention, and that's all I got, guys.
I know you didn't. Thank you, Kurt. Now I know Kurt. He's like pool Kurt. So now I make a connection to him. Oh, I have asked Michael, also known as Cornbread, to give up the chips.
I'm Cornbread, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Cornbread.
They have a chip system around here. And this is a white chip that you're coming in, coming back. You know the routine. If you just want to hug Cornbread. Oh, he is. Oh, wow. Good job. Welcome, man. Congratulations, brother. 30 days. Many days. 6 months. 9 months. Any birthdays? Congratulations on Chip Show.
Thank you, one and all, for joining the Blue Chip Speakers meeting tonight.
For me, seems like everyone. Circumstances.